and welcome back to Success Made Last. I'm Rick Tokini. Our very special guest today is Tom Kalin, who was Red Skelton's agent. And in case you don't know Red, he was one of the most popular TV stars of all time. His characters are timeless: Clem Kiddlehopper, Freddy the Freeloader. While Red passed away in 1997, we were actually able to meet Tom Kalin, his agent in Atlanta, and add a lot of laughter back into our life and talk about the one and only Red Skelton. So, Tom, it is great to have you on our show today.
Well, it's good to be with you, Rick. And my favorite subject is about life lessons, and the dearest friend I've ever had in my life, a fellow by the name of Red Skelton.
Hey, Tom, tell us about yourself.
Well, first of all have all my life represented different artists of all different skills, writers and sculptors and painters. I'm fascinated by brilliant talent, probably because I lack same, but I love to see great gifted people and be around them and do what I can do, which is I'm a salesman and I would get out and sell the product. And now how I met Red Skelton, I can tell you two stories. I can tell you the truth, or I can tell you the story that Red Skelton used to talk about on stage about how he and Tom Kalin met. His story is much more interesting. But he tells it like this. He says, one day I was at my home in California and the phone rings. It's Tom Kalin from Canada. He says, Red, this is hunting season in Canada. Why don't you come up and do some hunting? Well, Red said, I had a few days off. It sounded like an interesting proposal. So I came up to Canada and I met Tom Kalin. Tom says, now, Red, here's a shotgun. Here's some shells. Go in the field and do some, and I'll tell you what, I'll give you 14 dogs. Go in the field and do some hunting. So 3 hours later, I come back. Tom says, what's the matter, Red? Are you out of shells? I said, no, I'm out of dogs. Well, Tom says, look, Red, take a bird dog and go out and use him. So he says, stupidest dog I've ever seen. He says, I put him in the tree 3 times. He fell out every time. And it goes on and on with different breeds. Now, the truth of the matter is this. I'm from Western Canada, and there was a town called Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, my hometown. And they wanted to bring a professional hockey team, but they couldn't get it in because there was no international airport. And so I called my nephew, and I said, Saskatoon's getting bypassed. Let us get together, and let's bring entertainment, and let's go in the concert business, and we'll bring great names who don't mind going out of the way, and we'll bring them in, and I believe we will be the response will be terrific. The first name we came up with was Red Skelton. So we managed to get in touch with him. And unbeknownst to me then, but I will tell you momentarily, Red has two great loves of country, that is for America and Canada. He had a special feeling for Canada, which I will explain. So Red is just more than welcome to get an opportunity to come back and play in Canada. So this man, who now is over 70, travels by himself, one of the greatest stars that ever lived, comes up, he has to connect in Calgary, he has to transfer into Saskatoon, but he goes there because he wants to play for Canadians. So we do this show, and he and I really hit it off. We become instantly lifelong friends. And so after that, I said, Red, let's start doing concerts together. And so for the rest of his life, he and I traveled, and we went from Carnegie Hall in New York City to a hockey rink in Kamloops, British Columbia, and we traveled together, and we had magnificent stories, and along the way, we had a lot of fun driving a lot of other people crazy. That's the two stories. You can pick the one you like.
Red is one of those original artists. Can you share a story about Red's beginning?
Well, we might not be having this conversation if it wasn't for an incredibly talented fellow by the name of Ed Wynn. Red Skelton, a young boy in Vincennes, Indiana, at 10 years of age, his father had died before he was born. The mother was raising 4 sons, and there was no cash flow except what they could scratch out. One of Red's earliest jobs was as newspaper boy, standing in front of the Pantheon Theater in Vincennes, Indiana. Late one afternoon, a fellow comes by, and he says to the boy, he says, have you ever been in the theater? And Red says, oh, no, no. He says, I never had the money to buy a ticket. Well, the fellow says, look, I'm going to buy all your newspapers. You go home, get your mother, come back, and there'll be tickets waiting for you at the box office. Come in and see the show. So Red gets to the show, and who comes out on stage but that fellow, who happened to be Ed Wynn. one of the greatest talents, another great, great American talent. And Red says, my gosh, that's my friend. Now, Red and he became great lifelong friends. And that was the mentoring of Red. He tells me, he goes home with his mother. At age 10, he says, I know what I'm going to do with my life. I'm going to be like him. I'm going to make people laugh. And Red, at Edwin's funeral, 1966, he was a pallbearer along with Walt Disney. And Red did the eulogy. And his closing line was, Edwin's death is the first time he ever made anyone sad. That was the feeling that Red had for him. But that was his beginning of show business, and that was told him. I have a purpose in my life. At age 10, he knew exactly what he was going to do. It didn't matter what the aches and pains were, and there were times we had to bring him on stage in a wheelchair. He'd jump up and dance for 2 hours, and then we have to drop the curtain, take him back, and he'd rest for a bit. Then he'd go out the stage door, and he'd put on another show for the fellows out in the street. It just didn't stop.
So did Red actually go into show business because he was starving?
Times were incredibly tough. There is a homestead bought by the city of Vincennes, Indiana, where he was born. And he told me a story once, the mother having to scratch for groceries. And he tells me a story once, one evening, the mother brings the four boys to the table. She says, boys, I'm going to make you a deal. I can make dinner for you, or I can give you 10 cents, and you can all go to bed. And what's your choice? Well, the boy said, Mom, we'll take the 10 cents. Next morning, they gathered at the breakfast table. Mother says, okay, boys, do you want to make me breakfast? And they said, oh, yeah, Ma. And Ma said, okay, boys, but it's going to cost you 10 cents each. Mother scratched, but anyhow, the boys made it. And I think that was the resourcefulness that Red had such a feeling for everyone. Like, it didn't matter whether you were the president of the United States, you're a pauper, you were whatever, a pope. It was all equal. Red had the circumstances where he knew what it was like to be down and out. And he had a special feeling for anybody who was suffering. And that's where he made sure that everybody was treated equally. We would always get to the theater before 7 o'clock. We started our shows at 8:01. But Red and I would be there before 7 when the doors were still closed. And he'd walk on stage and he would look and study the theater. He was a great thespian. He would study the size of the stage, the far corners, how he was going to perform to make sure the guy who had the cheap seats got the same show as the guy in the front row. Then after the show, and he would go for 2 hours. He was the opening act, the intermission. He did the whole thing. Anyhow, later in the evening, say it'd be about 11 o'clock, and the theater's dark. There's only us and the security. He would walk out back on stage, and he'd stand there, and he'd look out. It was black. It was dark. It was silent, and nobody there. But he would say to me, he'd say, look at this. He says, an hour or two ago, I had some importance. Now, it's just silence. I'm right back to zero. So, Tom, let's get back and go to work. My job was to sell the tickets, because he would say to me, Tom, I cannot make an empty chair laugh. Make sure that sold-out sign is working. And I always did.
That is so insightful. I don't want to miss the importance of you teaching this lesson about trusting relationships and partnership. What advice would you give to our listening audience about that?
Well, fulfill your duty. I never had a problem. Red and I were always close because we had a contract, and I had to make certain payments, as you would expect. I always made them in time. The whole thing is keep your integrity, never lose it, and if you do, it's gone forever. So we had a great sense of trust, but those things are built with time and reputation. So that was the whole thing, and so consequently, without that, there's no future. It doesn't matter what you do for a living. The integrity was the main thing, and work that and never, ever let that shrug.
So I understand that the two of you always exchange gifts.
Well, just before he died, he had done a painting of a clown painting a cello. And he sent it to me just before Christmas. And right after Christmas, his secretary called me. She says, Tom, did you get the painting? I says, I've got it on the wall in front of me. I love this painting. Well, she says, I told him. I said, Mr. Skelton, you didn't paint the strings on the cello. And Red says, well, just tell Tom the guy's playing Silent Night. then on the back of the painting, he had written, "To my dear friend Tom, time stands still. It is we who move on." And when you hear people complaining they don't have enough time, don't worry about time. It'll be here a billion years from now. It is us who are moving on. A little relativity there. But that was two sides of Red. The comic side, and the side is he understands where life is going. And, as you said, he always said, have some fun, have some laughs. We don't get out of this earth alive, so enjoy yourself.
Indeed. Why aren't there more characters like Red Skelton today?
Things have changed. Well, here's the situation as you take Red through his medicine shows. Incidentally, right after the Ed Wynn experience, Red wanted to get right into show business, and a traveling medicine show came to town. He auditioned for him, and he got the job. So at 10, he left home, and he went with the traveling medicine show, and he was telling me they paid him $10 a week. He would send $5 home, and he would keep $5 for his expenses. Then from there, he went into vaudeville. And if you look at the characters of vaudeville, here's the thing. These people that you, whose names you know, Bob Hope, Milton Berle, George Burns, Gracie Allen, Eddie Foy, they were superbly talented. And as he said, if you've got the talent, it will come through a brick wall. So the whole question is that there was a very big shakeup. But these fellows, they were so talented. If you look at their careers, they were great everywhere. They were great on vaudeville. They made it in the movies. They made it on television. They went on the concert circuit. Red Skelton is in every Hall of Fame that the Americans have to offer. He's in the Hall of Fame of the movies, the comedy, radio. He was a star in radio. Those fellows could do it all. James Cagney is another one. They could just do it all. So it was just a rare thing. It's not a common thing, but, you know, one of those things those guys always told me, especially as you get older, stick with what you're good at. And so as Red aged and some of his physicality wasn't working as well, he couldn't get down on the floor and get up again quite easily. So he would stay with it, and he would do things that he would be terrific at. And you think, this guy's as great as ever. Well, they're smart. That's the difference.
So recently we interviewed Rose Marie, and she said the exact same thing. Stick with what you know. And it's sort of that old mantra of practice greatness.
Well, I tell you, that's good advice for anybody. It was particularly important to them because of the economic circumstances. If you didn't work, you had some serious problems. There was no social assistance. There was nothing to fall back on. So I think people scratch a little harder. Today, there's a lot of entitlements. So I think that has some positive aspects, and some aspects is some people don't try as hard as they should be trying. I think that is the difference. When I would see Red after the show, we'd go and have dinner. And then he'd go back to the room, and he would write till 2 o'clock in the morning. Incidentally, another story I love about Red is how he got his break in the movies. This is Red doing the Red Skelton thing. After the last show, he would go out and have dinner because he had done 5 shows. Now, in vaudeville in those days, when Red was master of ceremonies, there'd be 5 acts, and he would do an act in between all the acts, so you would have 10 acts. So by the end of the day, Red is pretty beaten hungry. So he would always go out for dinner after the last show. So one night, he was in Washington, D.C. What had happened, to give you a pre-sequel of it, he couldn't find work in New York, and a theater in Toronto called Shays offered him a job for a week as a master of ceremonies. Well, Canada kept him here for a year, and he would travel between Montreal and Toronto. He'd do a show in Montreal for a week. He'd get the overnight on Friday, come back to Toronto. He went back and forth. The American acts coming up and down went home and talked about this incredibly talented fellow playing Toronto. The manager of the vaudeville house in Washington, D.C. heard about him and said, "Red, I need a master of ceremonies. Come on down and join our show." So Red is working in Washington, D.C. As usual, after last show, he and a buddy from the show go out for dinner. And who comes in but the President of the United States, President Roosevelt. He's got 3 Secret Service guys, one pushing the wheelchair. Red goes over and he says, "Mr. President, I am negotiating a contract with that gentleman. And it would be so helpful if, on your way out, you would just wave and say, 'Hi, Red.'" Oh, the President says, "No problem, no problem, Red." So as he goes out, he says, "Hi, Red." Red says, please, Frank, can't you see I'm busy? The president thinks that is so funny. Anyhow, he says, look, Red, I'm having a dinner for my Hollywood friends at the White House, and I want you to come over and be my master of ceremonies. So Red goes over, and he, of course, as usual, he wows the show. And after the show, one of the fellows in the audience is Louis B. Mayer, head of MGM. He says, Red, I think you're going to be great in the movies. Why don't you come out to Hollywood and do an audition? This is the story Red is telling me. So Red goes out to Hollywood, does the audition. The director says, okay, Red, you got the part. Here's the script. I want you to go learn your lines. Be here at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. So Red reads the script. He's got one sentence, two words. The other guy says, we're going to have to bump that guy off. And Red's line is, Dewey. Now, this is his break in show business. So he stands in front of the mirror that night, and he rehearses. Dewey, Dewey, Dewey. He's ready. Next morning, he's on the set. The fella says, we're going to have to bump that guy off. Red says, we do. The director yells, cut. He's skeleton. He says, what's wrong with you? Don't you know your lines? Red says, no, my lines. He says, I know them backwards. That was his break in the movies, see? So then they put him into a movie. There's a series of movies called Whistling. Whistling in the Dark, Whistling in Brooklyn, and so forth. So he gets a part in this movie, and he is about five names down from the title. And his agent says, Red, these are not A movies. Don't expect anything. But something happens. They show the movie in the theaters, and every time Red's in a scene, the crowd, as they used to say, goes wild. And the theater managers see this, and it gets back to the studio. So Red's name starts going up the title until it's Red Skelton starring and so forth, because Red Skelton is the guy selling the tickets. So consequently, they did a few movies, and then he went on to be a superstar at MGM for a number of years. He played with all the greats, and it was always Red Skelton in Neptune's Daughter, Three Little Words, and so forth. And he played with Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly, Lucille Ball, all the big names of the day, and he was a favorite with them all. It came through day and night. As a matter of fact, Time Life has brought out a series of his better shows through. He was on TV from about 1951 to 1971. And they have just found those shows. They've remastered them, and they are available there. And, of course, and also he was very proud of his later career, which was that as an artist. He actually gave me the rights to do some of his paintings, clown paintings, as coasters. So the few things I sell of his today that's left over, I sell his coasters called Have a Drink on Red, which are Red Skull paintings. So those are some of the things there that he did. Speaking of which, I was saying that he was common, whether you were the Pope, the President, or a panhandler. I can tell you stories about him meeting all three. One of my favorites with him was when we were walking down a main street once, and a young panhandler comes by. And he doesn't recognize who Red Skelton is, speaking of Red, but he thinks that Red was worth a few dollars. So he goes up and he says, pardon me, sir. He says, but could I have some cash? Red says, cash. He says, what for? Well, the kid says, for the Lord. Well, Red says, and how old are you? The guy says, I'm 18. Well, Red says, I'm 81. I'll be seeing the Lord before you will, so I'll just give him the cash myself. everybody, guys. I'll tell you, just one more quickie here on presidents here is Ronald Reagan. Is that he and Reagan were very good friends, and quite often Red had the President Reagan on as a guest of his show back in the Reagan's acting days. And consequently, Red was invited to the White House for a Reagan dinner. And so someone else was telling me there was a reception line, and the president and Mrs. Reagan are at the door shaking hands. And it's very formal. And Red's in the line. And when Red gets up to the president, he says, Ronnie Reagan, where have you been? And he gives a big hug like he was lost or something. You know? The president thought that was hilarious. So he could entertain you. He didn't care where you came from or what you were worth. You got the show. It only took one person. Red looked at life around him, and he'd take these observations, and he'd create them into a character, and then he would put that character on stage, and he'd make some statements, you see. Now, in the case of Clam Cadiddlehopper back in the 30s, a lot of people never had the opportunity for much of an education. There was one-room schools, and kids were pulled from school because they had to go work on the farm or whatever. And consequently, they were not well-polished or educated. But there was nothing wrong with them. They were still brilliant and smart people. So Knigglehopper, who was, you might think, a country boy, you'd call him a country bumpkin, perhaps, but he was a very clever guy. He had great insight. Freddie the Freeloader, now, there again, in the Depression, there were several people, by the millions, actually, who had become poverty-stricken through no fault of their own. The factories closed, the economy died, people were having very, very hard times, and there again, no fault of their own. So Red created Freddy the Freeloader, and if you look at him, he's got a long coat, he's got a top hat. You can tell that once upon a time, he was a man of some certain means, but because of the circumstances he found himself in, he was now in poverty. But the character of Freddy is, it doesn't matter what happens to you, in any which way, do not lose your sense of humor, do not lose your dignity, and that's where that was that evolved. San Fernando Red, he was like some politicians are a little too smooth, a little too polished. And that was his character. And so he'd slip right into something else, like he'd do a San Fernando Red, like something like saying things like, my opponent, he's a fine man. His wife, fine woman, mighty fine woman. What he sees in that dame he's running around with, I'll never know. And so he sort of laid into every one of these guys, give him a little truth.
Man, those are beautiful stories. How did Red create the cross-eyed seagulls, Gertrude and Heathcliff?
Well, he was playing around Los Angeles and a little time between shows. And he'd go out to the pier, Santa Monica Pier. And there were two seagulls that really, really astounded him. It was like they were on stage doing an act. And they were almost like talking to each other, kidding with each other. He saw more than seagulls there. These were two really great characters. And he said, who does a show on seagulls at that time? So he named them Gertrude and Heathcliff. And there again, you see, he would do a whole act on two seagulls. But that was the inspiration. He happened to be sitting where there was two seagulls. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about Gertrude and Heathcliff. But that was the inspiration for that. So basically, he got his inspiration from looking around. I remember one time I met him in the lobby of a hotel. Is watching people's expressions as they were coming through the revolving door. Some people get a little nervous about that door getting stuck or something. So he's watching faces, looking for expressions. And this is where he got so much of his comedy from, was the physicality of not just the joke, not just the verbal, but his body language and so forth and whatnot. When he got on television back in the 50s, there was no closed caption. But along with the general public, he had two special interests here. That's with people who were hearing impaired and immigrants who did not understand the English language yet. But he could get his comedy because all you have to do is he could do it with his face, with his body. He didn't need to tell you something. So he became one of the world's greatest mime artists along the way, especially for these people. If you watch some of the current television and you hear this laughter, which is called canned laughter, there's no audience there, and the joke isn't particularly funny, but there's laughter there. And it's really, in most cases, Red Skelton's audience. He once did a show at the United Nations, 147 languages there. Not a word was spoken. They had a program, so they titled all his different mimes, and that's all he did. He never said a word, but it was hilariously funny. Of course, he taped it, and that's where they got all the laughter. So all they have to do with another show is take Red's audience laughter, pump it in, and you think something funny is going on. But that was the other part of that.
Let's close the show by talking a little bit about how Red Skelton ended all of his programs. Tell us about Red Skelton, the man of faith.
Okay. Now, Red never said, God bless. He used to make that point to me. He said, I've never said that. Because that presumes that you've been authorized by God to speak on God's behalf. That was where the may God bless come in. And growing up in that great country of America and appreciating the opportunity that was there, and back in the late 60s, there was all this protest. There was all this anti-American, the flag burning and so forth and whatnot. Red did a painting of Freddie the Freeloader with a fire extinguisher putting out a burning American flag. He was quite patriotic about that. He went up to West to do a show for the cadets. The reason I know this is because I asked him once. I said, Red, what's the greatest standing ovation you've ever had? And he's had thousands of them. He said it was the cadets at West Point. He decided that the Pledge of Allegiance should be studied better than just memorized, mumbled, or rotated through words that are meaningless. So he did this interpretation line by line, which he has done. But when you stop and think about what he said then and how appropriate it is today, he was certainly a man of great vision. There was another, that was just another aspect of Red. When he came to Canada, we did a concert in Ottawa, our capital here, and we always get to town a day or two ahead of time. So he likes to talk to the local people, get the local community interests and so forth, do some comedy locally and so forth and whatnot. So we were touring around Ottawa. We met the, we went to Parliament. We met people and so forth and whatnot. There were several protests in the city. And he says, why are these people protesting? They live in such a great country. So he says, I'm going to do something about that on the show tomorrow. So he gets a copy of our national anthem. And he does what he did for the Pledge of Allegiance. He did it for our national anthem, which starts, O Canada. And then he puts his, a bit in there. I see mountains and valleys and rivers and trees. It is truly Mother Nature's bounty. And so forth. And then that night, he read it to the audience in Ottawa. And at that time, Canada was having its own problems. We were having a problem about should Canada separate and break up and so forth. Some pretty heavy-duty times. And he, when he gave that rote there again, probably, if not the biggest, then the second biggest standing ovation he's ever had. So he came and he did something with his life more than just laughter. Laughter was what we remember him for, but he was a man with several missions.
Well, thank you, Tom. It was an honor to have you on today's show to talk about the late, great Red Skelton. We just absolutely loved him, and we miss him as an entertainer.
Well, thank you. It couldn't have been better than that, and I thank you for this opportunity to share some of the stories. Let us keep Red's talents going on for as long as people want to laugh.
And we appreciate Tom being on our Success Made to Last program. As we always say here, remember to be the best version of yourself and practice greatness. Have a great week. So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasine@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program.